Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
Rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
It's all over.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans. I feel we should have some sort of new theme song that outlines why nobody else shows up to this show.
I feel like I shouldn't be here, and we should have some third-tier replacement right. Come in, and then you can go, you're in my head.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Lots of stuff to talk about, some exciting things, including Michael Schiavello working for UFC.
What?
Not really. Sort of.
Why would you do that to me?
Well, because this,
like, what did
this,
I miss?
This weekend, for the first time ever, Invicta debuts on Fight Pass, and that will be called by Michael Schiavello.
Oh,
so,
I see what you did there.
Heretofore, Michael Schiavello working for the UFC.
All right. Excellent. Which, thank you, BuzzFeed, for that big switch.
I would like to. You to now take a poll of the top 10 sports
the
broadcasters.
Top 10 top sayings
of all time
of Michael Schiavello, yes, when he works in an Indian reservation free fight night.
Yes. So Julie Kedzie also going to be calling the action there. We will talk to Michelle Watterson, the karate hottie. She is main eventing that event. We'll talk to her in a little bit. Also on that event.
Please tell me she's okay with that name and she just didn't make that up.
She is.
Okay.
You can find her on Twitter.
Want to make sure.
She is apparently the only one at Invicta that understands branding. So
the karate hottie.
Yes. So she will be joining
us. I thought that was Jennifer Garner after Karate Kid 4. That's not.
She will join us. Also up on Saturday night is the strawweight belt in Invicta. What's interesting about that is that top 20 obviously is all straw weights. So this person who wins on Saturday night could be facing the other
in Invicta
could easily be an instant contender in the UFC when they crown a strawweight champion.
All women are instant contenders,
yeah,
in the UFC. We'll
there
talk
is,
a little bit
there
about
is that. UFC 177. Very quickly, I know last week we kind of joked right before the show ended, like, hey, Ken, remember UFC 151? And you went, ha, 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 ha. And then we went home,
uh-huh,
and Henan Baram knocked himself unconscious trying to make weight and did not make the fight.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you were one of the eight people that bought the pay-per-view, you know that. If
you
the rest,
hate bought
if,
the pay-per-view.
You, Ken Evans, hate bought the pay-per-view. But for the rest of the world, you might not even know that. But TJ Dillashaw defended his belt against Joe Soto.
Yeah. I don't know what you want. What do you want me to say about it? This is actually, okay, after all the hate watching, and we still don't have pay-per-view numbers yet, but I can't imagine.
Which is weird, because you would think they could count to 10 pretty quickly.
I mean, I was looking back, and in modern times, our most recent terrible. You either look at Vanderlei Silva, Rich Franklin, too. I think that was 140,000 buys.
Or anything Mighty Mouse, right?
And then we go to Johnson Bogatinov,
yes,
and that was. See, the scary thing about that was just a couple weeks ago, and that was 115,000.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine many more than that saw this TJ Dillashaw-Joe Soto fight, which if you take away everything that happened around it, if you take away the fact that Henan Barao wasn't there, you take away the fact that this card has been annihilated six times over, was in and of itself a pretty good fight to watch. And you had two guys that both ended up looking pretty good in the fight. I say that because TJ Dillashaw took a fight on not a day's notice.
Not even 8 hours, right?
Less than a day's notice.
Yeah.
A guy he was literally trading submission tips with 2 days prior. On Tuesday, they were doing an autograph session and talking about different kind of chokes they like to use in fights that nobody thinks of when they're in the fight.
And to frame this, Joe Soto has been a champ in other organizations,
mm-hmm,
and was on the card as the very first fight in the very first prelims.
So, yeah, and even I even caught you by surprise with this fact.
Yes.
You go, well, yeah, well, I mean, a guy with no camp, he did great. Well, no, he had a camp. He was on the card, but nobody knew it. But the guy's legit. So you had a situation where I really don't think TJ Dillashaw is getting enough credit for stepping up here. I really don't. Again, I don't want to say you go cancel a card, but there was slim opportunity for him to come out of this looking good, and I still thought he did, because he loses that fight. It's terrible. He lost,
yep,
to a guy that just, you know, popped in
took
that
it
day.
On 8 hours. Yeah, right.
He,
yeah,
beats that guy, and nobody's really that impressed because he beat a guy that just jumped into the fight. What he did do was beat the guy, pretty much beat him up for four rounds, and then finished him in the fifth, which is a good performance for a champion.
It is.
That also shows that Joe Soto was probably a guy who should have been in there.
He's Joe Soto, a game opponent. So you have this interesting moment, Ken, as you said. If you can take all of the drama away and have this thing, you have the sport sort of at its purest level. Two guys who didn't get a chance to train for one another, so it's a legit fight.
Right.
There's no tricks.
They both show up and start punching.
You don't know what that guy's going to do. He doesn't know what you're going to do. You sort of trained together. You gave away tips to one another, and now you're in here just fighting. Took TJ about three rounds, I think, to kind of get his tempo up because
he pretty much nailed him by the end of that second. We could go back and look,
but I mean, it took him a minute to figure it out because again, had no camp to figure out Joe Soto. He was figuring out Henan Burrell. Joe Soto, the same thing, has to figure out a guy that he's trained with, a guy that they've been switching back and forth with tips. And yeah, by the end of it, fifth round, TJ gets the finish. It's not the impressive performance that you saw with Henan Burrell. The reason being, there was no chance to train for Joe Soto. We're just going to fight.
And he's the champ. He's not going to take a lot of chances. Any chances in that fight are going to have to be from Soto. And, you know, Soto didn't have that much of an opportunity. Certainly wasn't outclassed. But, I mean, he really didn't have a lot for TJ Dillashaw. Dillashaw reminded me in that fight a little bit of Nick Diaz, the way he was kind of just peppering Joe Soto throughout the entire fight. So a decent win for TJ Dillashaw. I don't know if anybody saw it. I know a lot of people are saying the card was cursed. Joe Rogan at the Wayans called it the haunted UFC. See, it's funny, but don't you think that takes a little bit of the responsibility away from the fact that UFC's running so many cards?
It does.
You can call it haunted and cursed, but then again, you can look at the 10 other fights that have happened in the 3 weeks around it and go, look, you're deluded.
Well,
you're deluded and diluted. You're both if you think this should be on pay-per-view.
Well, and I mean, you need to look no further than Friday night to find a card that's better than UFC 177 that you would absolutely pay for. In Jacare against Musasi, Overeem versus Rothwell, Mitrione versus Derek Lewis, Joe Lozon on that card, John Moraga on that card. So Charles Oliveira
on
the card.
Well, and weeks before, you have Kung Lee fighting.
Yep, sure.
You've got guys like Michael Bisping fighting. You've got guys like Benson Henderson fighting. I love the events, but for them to put this on pay-per-view, and I know because I got a lot of heat on Twitter, I understand that there's commitments and things that happen. But the fact that I was still seeing Mighty Mouse and Henan Burrell on a commercial on DirecTV the day after this all happened speaks volumes to the fact that they just had to go through with a pay-per-view here. So I would have loved if they had the option on this, if they could have just fight past it. Hey, you know, we're sorry. Bellator was able to do that. Granted, they had about a week's notice on their pay-per-view when they lost that Tito Ortiz fight. They basically put it on Spike, I believe. Right?
Yes.
This would have been a great fight pass card. Hey, we're sorry. It's kind of fell apart. I don't think a lot of people would have turned their backs on it. I mean, they offered refunds. One thing that UFC did do is they stepped up. They offered refunds to people at the venue, said, hey, you want a refund, you can get it. They only had about 100 people take advantage of that, which is not a lot considering the arena size. So I think people wanted to see MMA. They realized the champ is fighting, but the draw just wasn't there.
Well, and so before we get on with the rest of the card, because some interesting things did, in fact, come out of this, you got to ask yourself, Ken, what do you do with Henan Burrell?
He doesn't get a title fight again, which Dana's already said, and
sure,
I agree with that. And I think you look at Henan Burrell, and you have to figure out who he wants to fight. Because as much as you can chalk it up to trash talking, as much as you can chalk it up to a fighter boasting, I 100% believe that TJ Dillashaw was right. His trainers wanted the fight more than he did. Henan Burrell's guys wanted him to get back in there against TJ Dillashaw. And that's the difference between sometimes having a good camp, too, and a good set of guys around you. I'm not saying they're a bad set of guys, but they're guys that probably thought they were behind the champ and want him right back in there and say, go get him, champ. You should have beat him. You should have beat him. They didn't want to recognize that Henan really had nothing for TJ in that first fight. Nothing was there. What were you building on? You need to go get another fight. Now, again, you got a rematch clause in there. I guess you got to take advantage of it. But it seemed as we went along here that this fight was something that Henan Burrell wasn't too excited about. Usually a guy coming back after his belt talking a lot. He's saying a lot of things. He wants to get back in there. He won't stop talking about it. You know, guys that want a rematch do that a lot. We didn't hear a lot from Henan Burrell leading up to this fight. You watch the UFC embeds, he's sort of just flipping around with his weight. I think he was at 170 early in the week, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Maybe it might have been in the 150s. Wherever it was, he didn't seem to have a plan to get there, which then led to him not making weight. And for a guy that's been a champion in that division, That's not because he doesn't know how to do it.
Nope.
That's because he either didn't care to do it or didn't have the motivation to do it, didn't want to end up there at the end. Because you can talk a lot about guys who miss weight all the time, and I know like Ramsey Najim had to lose another 2 pounds earlier in the night. Those are different reasons than when you end up with a guy who had held this belt, what, 2 months ago?
Yes.
Wasn't that long 90, ago.
Whatever, 89
yeah,
days ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. This guy knows how to make that weight. Dana White coming out after, oh, he needs to jump up. Look, Dana, you were calling the best pound-for-pound fighter 90 days ago. So I don't know if he needs to jump up and wait. This didn't happen as he's moved through his career and he's gotten bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
he didn't make weight for a reason, and I think that's because TJ's in his head.
Right. So TJ's in his head. He was undefeated in 30 consecutive fights, hadn't missed weight in any of those fights, misses weight this one time. You say it's because TJ's in his head. I say, okay, fine, but that still seems like there's some intent there. And I bantied about the idea when I was going through and doing the rankings of dumping him all the way down to 6 or 7 and in my mind making him climb back up because that seems intentional.
He's almost in the same spot we see Benson Henderson in right now, where Benson took a bad loss again to a guy.
But he made weight and made the fight.
No, he made weight, but I mean, if you want to look at working his way back up, even though he was the champ, that's a guy you've got to say, hey, you know, Benson Henderson, I don't want to see him near Pettis anytime soon unless he has a couple other fights. Nobody wants to see Henan Barão at this point in a title fight. The guy didn't... A title fight, not making weight. I'm trying to remember the last time that didn't happen.
I can tell you. Would you like to know?
Was it, I want to guess.
It sure.
was somebody against Anderson Silva,
it
right?
was, yep.
Was it, it wasn't Maya, was it?
Nope.
Who was it?
It was Travis Luter.
That's it.
Missed weight, became a non-title fight, and Anderson made him pay with lots and lots and lots and lots of elbows.
See, I you can't put a guy in who's sick or passed out or whatever happened.
No, and that's not what I'm saying.
I would have loved to have seen Henan Barão have to go in there after a hard weight cut that they didn't seem to care about. I think TJ Dillashaw would have finished Barão even quicker than he finished Soto. Two reasons. One, Joe Soto, not the fight he trained for.
Right.
Second reason is obviously somewhere his head's not in the game. That's not fighter bashing. That's just simply looking at what happened here. Guy was the champ 30 other times, fights at this weight. All of a sudden he can't make weight? That's weird. That's very weird.
It's weird, and we'll have to wait and see what happens because while we both feel that there should be some sort of penalty for this action, it caused a huge issue with a card that was already a huge issue. I'm always reticent to think that the UFC is going to do the quote-unquote right thing, and why I say that is because of what just happened, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got a guy who bounces out 8 hours before the fight's actually supposed to happen. You don't think that they're going to call Henan Barão if he's still on that card and be like, hey, we need to fight TJ Dillashaw.
I don't think that's out of the question, but I certainly think the fact that he can't just come back in and fight for the championship, I think that's a decent statement. I mean, there's only so much they can do in the situation they're in. And again, I don't want to absolve them of the fact that this pay-per-view card turned out terribly as far as what the buy rates are probably going to be, what the perception was with fans. Again, I look at the card, wasn't a bad night of fights to watch, but certainly $60 in for that? No, not after you asked me for $60 for Mighty Mouse a couple weeks. And then you're asking for me again to give you $60 for Mighty Mouse. I mean, Mighty Mouse fought, what, an eight? He was going to have fought within like 8 weeks here if he would have fought when he was supposed to.
Yeah.
So you're handing me these cards. John Jones is bowing out of cards. Gustafson's out of cards. Your draws are falling out of cards. You can put some of that on luck, but you've now lost three pay-per-views at this point? Two or three? I'd have to go back through and look.
Three, right? Because, I mean, if you include...
Well, you got 176 was canceled.
76 was canceled. This was changed twice, if not three times.
151's canceled. Well, yeah, and I was counting this not as a cancellation, but you lost it because you lost your draw. You had nothing. You had to do the pay-per-view. Because of the timing.
Right.
You could not do a pay-per-view, is my understanding from what some of the tweets I got.
Sure.
If anybody can clarify that, certainly do so at Wow Show on Twitter. So you're stuck here now. You've had three cards that have been essentially canceled. You have two real cancellations. This one that happened, and I'm sure if we were to dig through this list here, I dug up the last year, if we wanted to go back through, we could dig through and find other cards that probably shouldn't have been cards. Aldo Young wasn't supposed to be the headliner on that card.
Right.
I mean, that's a card that's 180,000 buys. Now, what we haven't done yet, and I think I'll try to do this sometime this weekend, is take the math on these years and figure out how much they're actually doing per card. Because that's the other thing you look at here is we're into 2014, and I believe we're eight cards in already. and we still got 4 months to go of the year. Yeah, eight pay-per-view cards.
Yeah, right.
Because 169 through 177.
Wow.
My public school math tells me that's eight. One of them got canceled, though.
Oh, yeah, so we got seven.
So you take, but I'm saying as far as how many they've got scheduled. So this is interesting for a number of reasons, notwithstanding the fact that it was a nice night of cards or fights. The card didn't have a draw to it.
No, and I mean, you know, you have Tony Ferguson eking out a split decision over Danny Castillo. Beth Correa gets a win and becomes the target of Ronda Rousey, which seems odd to me. I mean, Sean put it on her Facebook best that Ronda comes off as a bully in this case because mm-hmm. Beth really has, well, I'm sure Beth at undefeated wants to fight for the title, has no business being a title contender at this point.
Well, and we look at the situation too, and I joked about it earlier, isn't everybody a contender in the UFC?
Right.
This is the situation that you look at and you go, Ronda's got to be above this. They're fighters, they're in camps. You want to go beat up everybody who beats up your friend? And I guess she's got this leeway because the female division is so thin. Is she's got the leeway to go call people out. You don't see guys that, you know, roll with John Jones getting beat up, and John Jones goes, I'm going to beat you up now. He's got things to do.
Every time Travis Brown loses.
Right, exactly. John Jones doesn't run out to the media scrum and go, I'm going to whoop his butt.
Yeah.
No, he's got things to do. But boy, every time something happens in that cage, Ronda Rousey gets worked. She does. She looks like she's coming off as a bully at this point. You got other fighters who are probably more. Kat Zingano's probably out there going, come on. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? And I know we're going to see her here next week? Week after next?
Yeah, yes.
She's soon.
Yeah.
But she wants to win that fight and then get the shot. She doesn't want to have to wait for somebody to get beat up because they beat up Ronda's friend. That's
right.
Stupid.
Then you have, of course, Ramsey missing weight and then getting TKO'd by Carlos, who is still undefeated. He's now 11-0. So you had some interesting things coming out of this, but when you look at...
Oh, you skipped the Danny Castillo.
No, I didn't. I said a split decision.
Right. You missed the main part of that fight is he wants to add into the judging criteria, if he were in jail, would he be in trouble? That's what he wanted to add. Did you miss that part?
I did miss that part.
Oh, yeah. In the post-fight interview, he got mad because he lost the decision, and he said, if we were in jail, I'm just saying, he would have been in trouble. So I think that should be added to the judging criteria.
That should be. And what he's referring to, if you didn't watch the fight, is Danny Castillo had a lot of control in that.
He didn't do anything with it.
He didn't do anything with it. And that's, of course, where I feel the judging is getting better. Because if you rewind 10 years, he would have won that 40-0,
mm-hmm.
even though there's only three rounds.
Right.
Because that's how it was.
47.
Right, yeah, 47-0. So we're getting better, but... That's a tough fight to call because Danny says that Tony didn't have any power. Tony says that Danny didn't do anything with the control, so you kind of got a zero-sum game of nobody really giving anything and a very close decision that easily could have gone either way. That said, I'm pretty excited that we're kind of nullifying this ability to control a man on the ground. I get it. It's impressive you can control a grown man on the ground.
Right, but you're not in prison, and you're not looking for some prison love.
It's the fight game, and we're not looking for prison love.
That's not in the judging criteria.
That's certainly something.
Yet.
That's certainly something the sport.
We'll look at it next week on Way of the Warrior.
We will not look at it next week.
In-depth segment.
Or the week after that. When we come back, though, more fights. We'll talk about them next. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Turn the music up. Way of the Warrior. Tim, you can go and brush your shoulders off. I got you. Yeah. If you're feeling like... Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, covering the world of mixed martial arts. And this a busy, busy weekend as you've got two events on Friday, one event on Saturday. Friday night, you've got Fox Sports 1, the better than UFC 177 card, as Jacare Souza is taking on Gegard Mousasi. Co-main event is Alistair Overeem and Ben Rothwell. Matt Mitrione is on that card. Joe Lozan on that card. John Moraga on that card. Charles Oliveira on that card. And then also, you have your first look at some competition in the world of television MMA as Bellator 123 is on Spike. That's Patricio Pitbull and Pat Curran as the main event. King Mo and Tom DeBlas and Joe Burns. Bobby Lashley is on that card. LeVar Johnson.
Wait. Bobby Lashley?
Bobby Lashley. 10-2 Bobby Lashley is on there.
Interesting. Oh, that's right. He's been doing stuff with TNA and they kind of go back and forth.
Yes.
I always forget about that.
Yes, they do. And LeVar Johnson taking on Chuck Congo in the first card of the main event. So lots of stuff to watch on
Friday. Are those head-to-head?
Those are just about head-to-head. said yes.
Okay. All right. So, that will be interesting.
And then on Saturday, Invicta 8 will be on Fight Pass on UFC for the first time in the history of both organizations, as you have the atomweight belt up for grabs. We'll talk to Michelle Waterson in a little bit. And the strawweight belt is wide open, so somebody will walk away with that on Saturday night and possibly walk straight into the UFC as a number one contender, as at the end of Tough 20, they will be naming the strawweight champion.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch this whole thing play out, because we talked about the women's division being thin, and essentially UFC, without buying Invicta, has just set up a long-term partnership with them.
Right.
They're on Fight Pass. Obviously, I'm not exactly sure how the fighter swaps. I don't know the fighters well enough. They could have already swapped some fighters. I don't know.
Well, here's so to set some context, Jessica Penne was the woman that fought Michelle Waterson for the atomweight belt and lost via submission. Jessica Penne is a contestant on Tough 20. If she doesn't make it all the way through, does she go back to Invicta, or is she part of the strawweight roster as they're kicking it off? I don't know. But yeah, there's clearly a swap happening, because she's on both sites right now. She's on the roster of Invicta, and she's on the UFC roster for Tough 20.
So who wins in this fight? I got another question for you about Friday.
Sure.
Alistair Overeem versus Bobby Lashley.
They are not fighting. But
no, they're not.
I would take.
I'm just taking parts of the cards now.
I would take if we were playing UFC EA Sports at home, I would take Alistair Overeem in that fight.
See, this was a trick question. The winner in that fight is steroids. The winner in that fight is so many steroids.
All of the steroids.
All the steroids. But this Fox Sports 1 card, this should be a lot of fun. Jacare Mousasi. Winner of this fight. Are they close to a title shot?
It's what's funny is Jacare has said, hey, nobody has talked to us about being a title contender, but I mean,
because you got Weidman there.
You've got Weidman, obviously.
Silva, you can't put him back in there against Weidman. Machida's not going to happen. Vitor obviously is floating around there. But, I mean, you got Jacare Souza right there next to Luke Rockhold, who's been the other guy that's been talked about.
Yeah, but Rockhold wants to fight Michael Bisping for some reason.
Right.
Like, he just overtly wants to avoid the point of being there, which is a title shot.
Yeah, I get. Well, I think Luke Rockhold, Luke's still a step away, too. I mean, all these guys are kind of a step away as we kind of sort out what is Anderson Silva going to look like here after this Diaz fight. Where's Diaz going to land? Because, I mean, that's the thing UFC is looking at. They're not going to tell anybody they got a shot until we find out whether or not. Because if Diaz beats Silva, tell me you're not buying that Weidman-Diaz fight.
Yeah, no, I'm certainly buying that. I would also buy Jacare-Diaz. I would buy that in a second, too. I'm a huge Jacare fan, and I love how he's been able to transition out of, much like the Diaz brothers, more Nick than Nate, transition out of this brilliant jiu-jitsu career and fall in love with your striking and see it get better and better and better and better. And Jacare is certainly one of those guys. Mousasi, nobody to sleep on. He doesn't really look very excited when he does any of the fights.
Well, he sleeps, but then he fights
all of it. This is a tough one to call, but I think Jacare will win this one. And if so, yeah, he's probably a half step away, because, again,
we don't know what Belfort's still trying to get licensed, right?
Yeah, we have no idea.
Because I don't think we don't have Weidman set up for anything yet, do we?
Not unless his name is Vitor Belfort with a license.
Right. Well, and I've got to say, if I'm Chris Weidman, I don't go anywhere near Brazil for this fight.
No, I mean, unless you really want to prove something.
I don't think he needs to prove anything. Of course, if he wanted to go do that, that's fine. I certainly don't have any problem, though, with him going, look, you want to fight me, you come here, you get licensed, because you haven't been licensed here and off of TRT, what, in 7 years, something like that?
Yeah, but what's fascinating is if you were on our Facebook page or you subscribe to the UFC on YouTube, they released their very first vlog for UFC 177, and it was all stuff from 175 where Weidman took on Machida. And at the end of it, Dana runs up to Weidman and goes, man, you needed to do this because there's that luster around Anderson Silva and you beat him twice, but that didn't make a lot of belief.
Nobody believed it for some reason.
We all saw it. Right. So you needed this thing. And I don't know, Weidman and his camp certainly seem like the type of guys that would be like, oh, you want to fight on the moon? Fine. Where there's no gravity? Fine. You want to fight in the bottom of the ocean? Totally fine. Brazil? All in.
I'm with you on that, but I think there's been enough people around the UFC that have even said, hey, Vitor, there's no way you should put Weidman in there with Vitor unless he's testing and licensing. Vitor knows that. He went to the hearings.
Right.
He's trying to get things set up. I don't know where he is on licensing.
We call that the anti-Vanderlei.
He doesn't run away as fast as he can.
He doesn't run or not show up for things.
Right. So you've got Vitor obviously looming for Weidman if everything gets sorted out. But after that, you've got a bit of a free-for-all, don't you? As crazy as this middleweight division has been locked down for so long with Anderson Silva, I look at these fighters in the top 10, and nothing against Yoel Romero. But otherwise, I'll take any of these guys in a championship fight and probably enjoy it. Even Michael Bisping. And that's saying a lot right now.
And I would say in 6 months, you're going to be on the Yoel Romero card.
Okay. All right.
Anyway.
I'm not saying he's a bad fighter, but you don't need to jump down.
Here's what's, for me, really interesting, right? Because September is that weird time where Jacare or Musasi go in there and they have a decisive win in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of time left in the year to jump on another card, but like you said, what do you do with them?
With those two guys? I don't know.
Well, I mean, who's the winner, right? If they win in a decisive fashion and they come out unscathed, essentially, we're in this weird part of the year. Like, you get into October, you chalk it up, I'm fighting in January or February, right? You're not going to make it to December.
Well, and if Weidman-Belfort happens, I believe we're looking at December, correct?
Yes. Yep.
Because you're right. We do have a situation there where those guys, are they going to sit and wait? I don't know. Because either guy would probably be fighting down at that point. I can't imagine, as long as they don't look terrible in the win. I mean, these guys have to move up, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, Machida's going to slide at some point because he can't sit there behind Silva the whole time waiting for a Weidman rematch after that fight he had.
Right.
Looking at it right now, you got Chris Weidman. And this doesn't happen in a lot of weight classes, but there's a lot of respect given here in middleweight. A lot of the weight classes, guys lose and they just slide down. They slide away from the champ. Well, I mean, in this weight class, you've got Chris Weidman, Anderson Silva, Lyoto Machida, Vitor Belfort, and then Jacare.
Right.
And so those two guys in the first two spots, they're not getting a shot again for a while.
Well, and as we said last week, Machida is supposed to fight Rockhold. That's mm-hmm. supposed to be set. So take them out of there. They've got
if Bisping doesn't get the Rockhold fight somehow.
Yeah. So take those guys out of the equation. Vitor's fighting Weidman. Take those guys out of the equation. So Jacare absolutely has to fight down.
Yeah. The one exception would be if when is the Silva-Diaz fight supposed to happen?
What was that? The Super Bowl card, right?
Is that? Oh, that's too far off then. Yeah, he's still sitting. So, yeah, it looks like the winner of this fight may be fighting down, but it's going to be a great fight. We finally have these two guys where we wanted them probably, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yes.
Really close to, because yep. I think a lot of people want to see Jacare in there against Anderson Silva a couple years back. And
for
I think
sure.
you could probably say the same thing. Gegard Mousasi had a little bit of a run there where you said, okay, he's a guy maybe in there. And there were organizational differences and things like that that got in the way. So this should be a fun fight. This means something. It's on the main event of a card. You can't complain about Alistair Overeem on a card.
No, and he's been running around all week saying this is Overeem 7.0. I don't know how many reams we're on at this point, but a win over Rothwell is the start on his way to the championship. This is his restart, his up, up, down, down. Left, right, BA start. And then Matt Mitrione taking on Derek Lewis. If you don't know who Derek Lewis is, that's okay. Matt Mitrione in a very interesting situation. If you remember, he was on the card at UFC 175 fighting Stefan Struve, who had a complication with passing out in the training room prior to the fight. So they canceled the fight. So Mitrione has been sitting there waiting for something to do. So he's going to do that. Lozon and Michael Chiesa should be a very, very fun fight. A huge fun free fight on Fox Friday night.
Yeah, see, and there's no real investment here, so it's fun. It's fun to sit down and watch. I wasn't joking when I said hate watch about the last UFC card because nobody really wanted to see that Dillashaw-Burrell fight as a main event anyways, I don't think. I know a lot of guys were really excited to think about the prospect of that Burrell fight beforehand. But I didn't see anything there, so I don't want to rehash that. But this is going to be a fun fight. You sit down, you watch this weekend. How much cooler would that card have been with a couple of these fights and a couple fights from UFC Macau?
We made that decision, that conversation last week. If we had combined those two, we could have had another pay-per-view. And I know that's not part of the model, but we're now in an interesting situation that, I mean.
Yeah, but is four cards in 3 weeks the model when your pay-per-view is arguably one of the weakest cards? That can't be the model either.
No, and again, if you're dealing with marketing, right, because we're not, in this particular case, the UFC has said many things that make your head spin a little bit, right? UFC Macau, not for you American fans, right? We're doing it for them, which is fine. We're going to do these pay-per-views, and that's going to be our pay model, and then we're going to do these free shows. Except, so if you paid last week and you thought it was terrible or uninteresting or you didn't know what was going on because you didn't know any fighters, we now fast forward to Friday night. Well, now you have a choice, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Spike TV and Fox Sports 1. Both of them are free.
Yes.
And you may know more people on Fox Sports 1, but if that card goes sideways, there's another place you can go to where you can't do that when you invested $60.
Well, there's also a great line of thinking on this whole thing about watered-down cards is the fact that we used to see guys come up on big cards. You would buy the Anderson Silva card or the George St. Pierre card, and there'd be guys on the undercard, and you'd get to know them. Well, if I don't get to know any of these guys because I didn't buy the TJ Dillashaw card, I might not care that about the fact that somebody wins on that card and maybe should be in there for a title fight next time, or maybe should be in there for a number one contender. It takes me longer to get to know these guys when they're in these situations where not a lot of people are seeing all the cards. So you got up-and-comers on all of these cards. Let's say Charles Oliveira has a great win. Now, I'm just going to take him as an example.
Sure.
A lot of times, guys on a pay-per-view in that spot, and this isn't a pay-per-view, but I'm using that as an example, a lot of guys in pay-per-view in that spot could jump up almost to a co-main event with a big win.
Yep.
Like, you'll remember at UFC, blah, blah, blah. Charles Oliveira, big knockout of Nick Lentz in the first round. He could jump almost to co-main, and you and I would remember him from the pay-per-view because essentially we're buying all the pay-per-views at that point.
Right.
But now we've got Fox Sports 1 cards. We've got pay-per-view cards. We've got Fight Pass cards. We've got all these cards. There's guys out there, and I know this gets into a weird line where a lot of guys don't think I respect the talent of some of these dudes. That's not it at all. I just don't know some of them. And if I don't know them, the interest isn't there. That's just a reality.
Not only is that the reality, Ken, but there's no scarcity, right?
Right.
You don't need to pay for the pay-per-view last week because you've got three cards this week.
So I don't know that in that fight that – let's go back to the pay-per-view. Carlos Ferreira, great win over Ramzy Najim. Did anybody see it? Does anybody know that? That's where Carlos Ferreira should have been able to slide up the card. And next time he's going to be on a pay-per-view in a co-main. But maybe next time he'll be on a Fight Pass card. Or maybe – there's so many spots for these guys to go, which is good for them when they have more opportunities. But it's bad to build these cards and to expect people to get to know your fighters and what's going on there.
So you've got the UFC on Friday night, Fox Sports 1. You've got Bellator on Spike. And then on Fight Pass on Saturday night, you've got Invicta 8. As I said here in a couple minutes, we will talk to Michelle Waterson. She is fighting in the main event. And then a lot of other things going on in the world of mixed martial arts in the UFC. Shogun has been given the nod. He will take on Jimmy Manoa November 8th. In Brazil. That should be a fun fight. Everybody likes to see Shogun fight, and Jimmy Manoa could use a victory. So,
We'll
see if that's
You're just calling it already.
I'm calling it already. Gustafson is, speaking of waiting and figuring out what is going on at your particular weight class, Gustafson's like, I give up. I'll fight. Give me somebody.
Who's he going to fight?
Can I do something? I don't know.
Can he fight Rashad?
He could, I guess.
Talking about looking for wins.
Right?
Oh!
Okay. All right. That's exciting. So he's open to another fight, as he should be, since the Cormier-Jones fight has been pushed back. That's a long time for Gus to wait out. So he's going to try and continue to stay busy. Exciting news for the Anthony Pettis camp. No, he's not defending his title yet. We'll have to wait a little bit for that. But he becomes the first MMA fighter on a Wheaties box. Why is that important? Well, in the entire history of the Wheaties brand, there's only been four other boxers or fighters that have made the cover. Jack Bear, Jack Dempsey, Max Bear, Muhammad Ali, and Kenny Norton are the only four.
And if you know anything about boxing, you know that all happened in 1926.
Yep. Well, I mean, but to that point, you know, Muhammad Ali, probably the most recent boxer in that list of people. That should say what a big deal this is and how far this sport has come that they're going to put Anthony Pettis on the cover despite the fact that he hasn't been in the sport in 2 years.
Are we going to say despite the fact that he's Anthony Pettis?
Despite the fact that he hasn't been in the sport for essentially
2 years. And again, nothing against Anthony Pettis. But isn't that a weird choice out of all of the fighters?
It is a weird... Like,
did John Jones want too much money? Because whether or not a lot of people hate John Jones, but I mean, if I'm just going to grab a guy out of the UFC, I'm going to probably grab John Jones if I can.
Not me. I'm taking Ronda.
Okay. That's not a bad choice.
I mean, Ronda would have won that instantly.
Ronda, you put her on there. Weidman you go to. Not the headlining guy, but he's beat the champ a couple times. It's just kind of weird. Anthony Pettis. Good for him, but...
Great for him, and you know, from a whatever the perspective of how that got picked.
A value proposition, is what we'd call it.
Well, Cain Velasquez would have been a great pick, too. Another guy who's been out of the limelight for a minute. This is a great opportunity to put him up there. He's got a title defense coming right around the corner. So, but big news for the UFC and great news for Anthony Pettis. Dana, after this past weekend, talking at one of the parts of the scrum, said he is now, finally, he's now open to Ben Askren. Ben, not so open to it, but Dana is like, yeah, that sounds like we should work something out at this point because you beat everybody on planet Earth at that division.
Yeah, but I mean, I think this whole Ben Askren thing, and I get you like him. I
know.
I
just think it's if you like Chael Sonnen, you can't hate on Ben Askren because he's doing the same thing.
I'm not hating on Ben Askren
except
at
he's
all.
Winning. That's the difference.
No. Stop. I don't hate on it at all. But I think I have to wonder when it gets this far along, where the guy, like you said, is he 14-0 now?
Something like that. Yeah.
You got to wonder at some point if people are just in his ear too much. I mean, I would say Bellator, this could be one of the things where they're overpaying a dude, except his last couple fights have been with ONE FC.
Yes. And he demolished the dude, a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I get it. I think he's their champion now, too.
Yep.
I think that was
a
championship fight. So I get it. I mean, all the accolades, the wrestling accolades, you've got to wonder if somebody's in his ear making him think he's worth more than he is. Let's remember, this is a company that told Fedor to go pound sand because he was asking for too much money.
Yes.
I don't know if that's the case, but I got to wonder at this point, why isn't Ben Askren in the UFC?
Well, originally it was because they're feuding. He and Dana have been feuding back and forth, both on Twitter and in person.
Two words, Tito Ortiz.
Right. No, I get it. And I don't know what it is, but it would be, for me, it would be interesting to see where the rubber meets the road, right? He's 14-0. Can he really hang with UFC guys?
And I don't know.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know either because you're
run
not in
right
the UFC.
Over a pro, what are we talking about? What, ONE FC?
Right.
I almost said Pride. Run over that guy doesn't mean anything as far as UFC.
No, but I still think he becomes one of those interesting fighters. We've solved one of the issues with Eddie Alvarez, right? He was one of those guys out there that like, what would happen if Eddie Alvarez fought in the UFC? Well, now we get to figure it out. What would happen if Gil Melendez came over from Strike? Okay, we figured that one out, too. What would happen if Fedor? We'll never know what happened with Fedor.
He would have lost to Brock.
He would have lost to Brock. Yeah, yes, at Dallas Stadium, for sure. And then one more thing before we get to Michelle Waterson. We have talked not at length, but in minor detail about War Machine and his insanity. Heads to court October 17th, facing life in prison without the ability of parole and 32 counts, including attempted murder, sexual assault, battery, coercion, preventing or dissuading a witness or victim from reporting a crime, first degree kidnapping, and that charge results in substantial bodily harm.
Okay, seems about right.
Yeah, although, as I said on Facebook, I thought 32 counts seems a little low. Seems
yeah,
like
I mean,
like
he's in some trouble. I think we talked too much about him, but
well,
we gotta cover it.
I think you've got to talk about it, and I think the fact that he has a touch point with the UFC, I do like that going forward, everyone's been calling him an ex-Bellator fighter at this point to get it away from the UFC. I don't know who in the PR department, of the UFC has been staying on that, but it's been interesting to see that shift from ex-UFC fighter, as he was reported on TMZ,
to MMA fighter, to
ex-Bellator fighter. so
I don't mean to laugh, but that is genius somewhere.
Whatever that looks like, in the UFC should get a pay raise. All right, when we come back, we will talk to Michelle Waterson. She defends her title after a long layoff in Invicta this Saturday night on Fight Pass. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. Played a part of the giant and started relying on the side. Way of the Warrior. Hit you between the eyes, partner, you're dying. Bigger they are, the harder they fall. To me, it's beautiful as a grand piano playing at Carnegie Hall. Greedy. Way of the Warrior. It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Big day in the world of female mixed martial arts as Invicta makes its debut on Fight Pass. Joining us right now, she is the champ at 105 pounds. She is defending her belt this weekend. Michelle Waterson is on the line. Michelle, how are you?
Good. We're just in the airport right now, so it's a little hectic.
That is quite all right. I understand if you've got a bounce or any of that stuff. But a big historic weekend as Invicta makes its debut on UFC Fight Pass. You are in the main event defending your title. It's been a long layoff, but does this feel like this is a payoff for you?
I really do. You know how they say patience is a virtue. And, you know, there were times when I was like, F the patience. but I really appreciate Shannon and all the hard work that she's been doing behind the scenes to get this deal going. And now that it's going, you know, we got to hit the road running, and I'm excited to put on a good show come September 6th.
And what's exciting about Saturday Night, of course, is for those of us who have been following what you guys have been doing, we know what Saturday Night is going to look like, right? But there's a lot of people who have subscribed to Fight Pass who really have no idea what a fantastic event Invicta puts on, and what these two main event and a co-main event that are both title fights is going to look like. For somebody who's tuning in for the very first time, can you walk them through just how exciting this thing's going to be on Saturday Night? Yeah.
Well, if nobody's ever seen a female fight before, you know, they're they're in for it, because girls like to scrap. They're like, I think they're worse than men. They just meet at the center of the ring, and then they just go for it. You know, they're catty, and so it being the first all female fight card on UFC Fight Pass, I feel like everybody is eager to put on a good show and make it a fight card to remember. The card's stacked, and so every single fight, whether it's going to be a stand-up war, a submission scramble, it's going to be jam-packed of MMA goodness.
You have been off for a little bit over 17 months, a long layoff. You are facing Tamada, who seems like a woman who's going to go out there and go get this thing. What do you expect to see from her on Saturday night when you step into the octagon to take her on?
I think exactly what you said. You know, she's coming from Japan. She's stepping outside of her home, so she knows she has to bring it if she wants to take that belt away from me. And from her record, she's never been finished. And so I think that she's going to be one tough chick, and I'm excited for the challenge.
You are excited for the challenge, but I think you're understating the camp that you come from. For people who are being introduced to you for the first time, you train with the likes of John Jones and Travis Brown. You train with Holly Holm. A lot of names that are being thrown around in the UFC. So people should be really amped up to check out the main event on Saturday night, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I feel like I've had a year camp. Like, I have not let up on the training, and you know, it's just, I think it's gonna all come out on Saturday night, and I don't know how it's gonna come out, but it's gonna come out pretty excitingly.
Now, Michelle, earlier in the year, we talked to Robbie Lawler, who has been in a similar situation in that he keeps getting called on to do fights, so he felt like he was in an eight-month camp. What is it like to kind of manage your body over that length in order to peak this weekend? How vital is having somebody like Greg Jackson in your corner to make sure that you maintain where you're supposed to maintain and then peak at the time that you're supposed to peak, being, of course, Saturday night?
You know, I think Coach Jackson is real good at keeping me calm and making sure that, you know, I'm in the right place at the right time. So I was in the gym training, but, you know, some of the days he'd tell me, hey, Peanut, chill out. Go hang out with your family. Go do this, go do that. You don't need to be peaking right now, you know. And so, you know, I have been training, but not all of it's been like balls to the walls, 100%. It's been, you know, a lot of technique, a lot of strength and conditioning, a lot of mental preparation. So it's been a great growing experience for myself.
Do you think it would be fair to say that this will be the best karate hottie that we've ever seen?
We'll see.
It is Saturday night for the very first time on UFC Fight Pass Invicta. Michelle Watterson, it has been a pleasure to talk to you. Cannot wait to see the fight on Saturday night. Have a wonderful weekend and enjoy the airport.
Thank you very much. You too.
And the rest of that card flushes out like this. Michelle Watterson is the main event, taking out Tamada at 105 pounds. That is a defense of her title that she won in April of 2013. The co-main event is a strawweight title bout. Why does that matter? Well, because Tough 20 is strawweights. So these women could be heading to the UFC, or at least one of them. Kanapa from Finland takes on Stephanie Egging. The 115-pound title, the strawweight title, is vacant. So winner takes all on Saturday night. And while we didn't have time to get into it, Michelle Watterson was one of the names rumored to be on Tough 20, but because of a contract conflict, could not do that. What's interesting is Jessica Penne is on that season, and Jessica is the woman that Michelle beat in order to get her 105-pound title. So she easily could make the jump up to 115 pounds and compete in the UFC at strawweight. Will she do that? Not sure. But Invicta 8 makes its debut on Fight Pass for the UFC this weekend. And if you are looking for something after Friday night's fight night, it's something to check out on Fight Pass for sure. And as usual, you can keep up with everything that we do online or any other way, really, by searching WOW Show Twitter and Facebook. We'll have the results for both Friday night and Saturday online. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.